This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher. It's about news, information, ideas, and tips for living life over 55. First, 60 seconds of Do You Remember?
Our challenge shouldn't be anything that's just legislative. We're supposed to, each one of us, be leaders. I think our challenge has to be to set as our goal. And we're not going to get here in 2 years, but this ought to be the goal that we go home and we tell people we believe in.
That is Newt Gingrich, and according to Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia, born June 17, 1943, politician, historian, author, political consultant representing Georgia's 6th Congressional District, as a Republican from 79 until his resignation in 1999, serving as the 58th Speaker of the House of Representatives from 95 to 99, Gingrich was a candidate for the 2012 Republican Party presidential nomination. Well, hi, everyone. Negotiating. You know, I think it's both a skill and a talent. What I mean by that is that some people are really naturally better at negotiating, but at the same time, there is a thing or two we can learn to be better. Now, the way I look at it, it's never too late because, after all, no matter our point in life, we'll have to negotiate things because we aren't an island unto ourselves. And at times, how we negotiate could be the difference between happiness and frustration for a long time. So with all that said, I just think it's worth talking to a negotiating expert to see if we can learn a thing or two. Now, I found a guy named Stephen Cohen. Cohen is president of the Negotiating Skills Company. He even wrote a book on the topic. So first off, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. And what's your take on the importance of baby boomers honing their negotiating skills?
Baby boomers, of which I'm actually a little senior to an average baby boomer because I think they started in 1946, have to deal with issues of negotiating with offspring, but also very often with their parents, as well as with the normal folks that everybody negotiates with, whether it be car mechanics or doctors or insurance companies or all the broad range of folks who have an impact on the quality of our lives.
So really negotiating comes into every part of our life, even though we may not think of it on an everyday basis.
Absolutely. The concept of the book is that there's an inner negotiator in everyone, and The Practical Negotiator, which is the name of the book, helps you find that inner negotiator.
So we have certain basic skills, it sounds like, to do that. In other words, it's somewhere inside of us.
They are inside of us. It is a normal human way of exchanging things in a civilized way. The idea that negotiation is only for secretaries of state and corporate CEOs is not realistic, because we all have to negotiate all the time, whether it's getting the best price on or the best circumstances for getting our refrigerator fixed, to what to do about a neighbor who is not necessarily the most charming person in the world. We're always negotiating about something or another like that.
Those are really two good points, because I think all of us can relate to both of those situations. You know, I've got a neighbor who has a barking dog, and it's and that's a tough one to negotiate.
Well, it depends how successful you are at barking back at the dog and convincing him or her to, give you the what's called the superior position in the dog hierarchy. But obviously, that's not negotiation, and it's also probably not likely to work terribly well. When you have a neighbor with a barking dog, part of the question is what the relationship is with the neighbor and whether there are demonstrable impacts that the dog's barking have on you that are troublesome. And more going back to that first part of it, what the relationship means to you in terms of its importance. If you really don't care about the relationship, you may negotiate in a harsher and less gentle way. But it may well be that you find that even if you don't particularly like the neighbor, negotiating in a respectful way is more likely to get their acquiescence and their willingness to cooperate with you.
So, Stephen, let's get to the heart of the matter here. We're talking about negotiating. So what do you have to decide as to how you want to approach this negotiation as to whether you're going to get the most money out of it, whether it's going to be the most helpful for someone you know, whether it's going to make you the happiest? Where do you decide?
The first thing you have to do really is understand why your objectives are important to you. Just because they're important to you in the initial view of things doesn't necessarily tell you why they're important to you. And you need to know whether getting a good price is important because of your personal financial situation, or because you don't want to get ripped off, or because you want to make sure that you get the best possible quality job done or best possible quality purchase made. You know, price is only one of the interests that you have in a transaction. The transaction works best if what you get is something that really satisfies your deep-seated gut interests. And so you need to examine yourself. And there's a Japanese tool that people talk about called the five whys. You ask yourself five iterations of why. Why do I want this? Why, if I achieve that result, why is it a good thing for me? And you just keep asking why, you know, five times more or less. Peel away the skin of the onion and get an understanding of what you're pursuing. Because the better you understand what is going to make a difference to you, the better able you are to judge whether the possible resolutions make sense. Do I accept this choice or do I walk away? Do I try to get a little bit more? Do I try to find a way to accept a little bit less, but in so doing, feel better about it?
So if you accept the argument that life in itself is an everyday negotiation, how do you prepare for yourself for the negotiation that maybe you didn't get to plan for?
That's a very good point. One of the things that results from preparing when you have the opportunity to do so is that you are sort of rewiring yourself and recreating or strengthening your instinct to be able to think on the fly, so that if you've been asking yourself questions often enough, then even when you don't have time, you can still reflect on the kinds of questions that you should have asked if you had the time and come up with a better approach. It's like when you're at work, when people are still on the job, you know, some negotiations you can prepare for because you said, you know, you have a meeting in such and such a period of time, 3 days, 3 hours, 3 minutes. But sometimes you walk out of your office or your cubicle and you bump into somebody and a negotiation starts that you haven't even been thinking about. And you can't prepare for that kind of negotiation. And the same is true if you're on the street and bump into a neighbor who is known for noisy parties, or somebody is taking your parking place, or things like that, where you're not really expecting to start negotiating. So preparing when you can gives you the power to negotiate when you can't prepare.
So it sounds, to be an effective negotiator, you really have to make some real personal decisions about yourself. In other words, what's really important to you? What are your values?
Well, there is very much of that. Years ago, I worked in a small real estate firm, commercial real estate, and there were four of us who were involved. And we were renting property out. And during the preparations for negotiations with potential tenants, the four of us would sit around and say, well, what do we want to offer them? What are they going to say if we make that offer? And so on and so forth. We'd get to a point where usually one of the people involved would start taking the role of the tenant, and the others of us would start negotiating with him or her, and, you know, all of a sudden realize we're negotiating with ourselves and we're not negotiating with a person on the other side, and we may be giving things away before the negotiations with the other party actually even begin. So getting the family together, the friends together, or, you know, the bowling team together to figure out what do we want and how do we want things to happen is a very important thing to do. It's a very important exercise, but you have to recognize that you don't give things away internally. You may discuss what kind of concessions are we prepared to make, but what do we want for them? So that you never make a concession unless you get a reward for it.
So I'm sure your expertise, Stephen, and along with the book and what you know, came after many, many years of life experience. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, after I finished law school, I went into politics and government for a while, and I was a lobbyist in Washington for the city government of Boston. And that required a lot of negotiating because the city of Boston didn't have the kind of corporate money that, you know, your classic commercial lobbyist has to make political contributions and encourage people to support the role, the result that you want. Then I went into the commercial real estate business that I just described, and there was constant negotiation with clients, with vendors, with tenants, with people from whom we were borrowing money, whatever it might have been. And then after that, I took a course in negotiation and realized that I loved it, and I've been doing it all my life, and the place where I took the course put me on their advisory board, and I said, aha, that's a sign. And so rather than getting involved with them, I went to work starting an independent consulting firm, and we worked with corporations around the world in more than 20 countries, and we trained people from, probably 100 countries, and learned a tremendous amount from the people with whom we were working.
So, Stephen, to be the most effective negotiator, tell us a little bit more about what you have to do to prepare, you know, do your homework and be ready to go.
Absolutely. The homework that you really have to do, after you've got a sense of what your own interests are, it's really very wise to understand what the interests are of other parties to the negotiation. That doesn't mean that you have to become their advocate, because you really shouldn't. You have to advocate for yourself. But what you want to do is get a sense of if, you know, there's that old line, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, which is a very old-fashioned and sexist line nowadays. But if you understand what another party's interests are, and you can respond to those interests in a way that they find favorable, they're much more likely to agree with you. The other thing you want to do is a more broad-ranging kind of homework and think about who are the stakeholders and what are their interests in this overall situation. So that, for example, if you're trying to do something in a situation where you're sort of bending the rules, what will the impact be for the entire community, whether it be an apartment house or a condominium or a family group or a neighborhood or what have you? If I bend the rules, does that mean that somebody else is going to bend them even more, and are we going to end up with a degree of anarchy? So you need to think about what are the interests of the range of stakeholders that derive some kind of consequences from the negotiation that I'm going to have with my counterparty.
You know, you've heard the adage about a nice guy finishing last, so when it comes to the world of negotiating, that's a factor in there. And if you're a person who doesn't want to offend and hurt others, does that mean you're going to lose?
One of the difficulties that people have is that we don't like to insult other people, which is frankly a good thing. But sometimes telling somebody else the truth is the best way to go forward. So we have to have the capacity to say yes or no with equal composure. And so a negotiating person has to be able to say, no, that doesn't work for me, or yes, that does work for me, so that the homework they've done beforehand gives them a sense of how they measure whether something is good or bad. But we all want to be good guys. But being a good guy doesn't necessarily mean saying yes. Being a good guy means behaving in a way that's intelligent and respectful of the person with whom you're dealing. Yes, because negotiation is not simply a matter of dealing with conflict. I mean, when you go out to buy a car or buy a house or buy a subscription to a book at a bookstore, and you're concerned about the price and so on, or you're concerned about the condition of the thing that you're buying, that's not a matter of conflict. It's a matter of people on either side of a situation resolving it in a way that's maximally beneficial to each one. Now, sometimes one party does a little bit better than the other. I don't believe in the concept of win-win, where people think that everybody walks away with exactly the same amount of goodies in their pocket. But over the long haul, you negotiate with the same people over and over and over again. And if you view each negotiation as an episode in an ongoing relationship, then you realize that sometimes I do a little bit better, sometimes they do a little bit better, but it balances off in the end.
Well, tell me, do people negotiate with their spouse or significant other? How does that work?
Well, how it works varies tremendously with the individual couple. But, the processes that people use for negotiation vary enormously. But, part of the issue when you are negotiating with someone who's important to you in your family, say, whether it be your spouse, your partner, your kid, your parent, you're looking at what is going to be the most important potential range of outcomes of the way we deal with each other. When my wife and I had our two kids as, young kids, we had a rule that if a daughter wanted something from her parents, both of the parents had to be in the same room, so that the kid couldn't come to me and say, "Daddy, I want X," and I would say, for example, no. And then the kid would go into another room where my wife was and say, "I just asked Daddy, and he said I could have this thing, so would you agree also?" So there was a process there where we treated the girls as negotiating partners from a very young age, and as a consequence, now that they are young women in their 30s, They are very highly civilized people, which is wonderful. And if we do that with our parents, which can be much more challenging, it has the same impact.
Well, I wish I'd have learned some of that earlier on, but might have avoided some of the conflicts. But now you mentioned parents, and are you referring to things having to do with their older years, or maybe I missed that part?
Well, You didn't miss that part. It's actually both. I mean, the majority, if you're a lucky person and everybody is healthy, the majority of your relationship with your parents, as well as with your kids, is as a grown-up. They're grown-ups and you're grown-up. And sometimes, of course, you do get to a point where there are problems that occur at later stages of life, where you've got to negotiate about things like who's going to control the money, who's going to make decisions about the house, is it really appropriate for you to continue driving, things like that. And it can be emotionally extremely draining, but if you have an understanding of what's in it for me and what's in it for them, and most important, what's in it for the relationship, you're going to be more comfortable negotiating. If you recognize that you may have to use what some people call tough love in all kinds of circumstances, it may be very painful in the immediate, but over the long haul, it may reduce the stress and strain on all the parties involved.
Well, Stephen, as we come to an end here, give us a tip, if you will, that we can use to take away from this interesting talk, and also a little bit more about the book.
Totally unlike any negotiation book that I've ever seen, and I've read many, many of them, because it is an advice column spread out across a broad, broad range of topics. And the questions came from people in more than 30 countries and more than half of the American states. So that it gives you a chance to live vicariously through the experiences of other people and see what kind of negotiation choices they've been offered in the book. So that's something that I think makes it an easier thing to read than a textbook that tells you, you must do this, you must do that.
Kind of a case study approach, perhaps.
Yeah. Huh? This is real life cases.
That's I love that way of explaining things.
Mm-hmm. And my British mother-in-law, who often finds ways to see me as an imperfect person, gently put, said, "I love your book." She said, "I never imagined people could get into such incredible pickles." So it's fun that way. But looking, you know, to answer your question more precisely, the practical negotiator basically says, be prepared. Take a look at what you're about to do, what you do normally, and see whether it is responding to what's really important to you, to what your interests are. And remember that your relationship with somebody may be more important with getting their dog to shut up. Your capacity to demonstrate that you add value to the situation may make it so that people are more likely to want to negotiate with you. If you treat other people with respect, then they're much more likely to treat you with respect and your ideas with respect. So negotiation is all about trading a single commodity, every single negotiation. And that single commodity is information, whether the information is about price, the information is about feelings, the information is about the quality of a particular product, whatever it is, it's information. And if you recognize that you're trading information and you ask questions and you listen to what underlies those questions, the negotiation is far more likely to yield a satisfactory result.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much. It's been just fascinating, and I know I learned a lot, and I think others who listen will too.
Well, I thank you very much, and it's been a pleasure talking with you. And the people who are interested in the book can find it on Facebook, looking for The Practical Negotiator, or they can find it at our website, which is practicalnegotiator.com. And I hope they look at it, like the Facebook page, read the book, and enjoy it.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. And finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our newsletter. Thanks again.